Good morning, Council Tree. This week marks the 10th month that I've been on staff here at Council Tree. 10 months? Let's hear it. It feels like I'm just getting started. So for all of you, just so you know that, my family is getting settled in Fort Collins, and we are honored to call this church our church home. And I'm honored week after week to lead you in worship, and I never want to take that for granted. My position here at the church is the associate pastor of worship, and what that means is that my primary calling is to lead corporate worship. Now, corporate worship is what you do together as a group. Private worship is what you do at home. Private worship is what you do in the woods or in your car, hopefully not too distracted while you're driving, but the private worship is what you do by yourself. Corporate worship is what we do together. And during a worship gathering like this that we experience on a Sunday morning, we will spend most of our time in corporate worship in song. We unapologetically spend a significant amount of time singing together. Throughout the ages, the churches use music to sing to God. In fact, music is woven into the very fabric of the global church. In fact, music and congregational singing was so important that Martin Luther, the great theologian, the Reformation theologian, wrote a lot about congregational singing and music in church. In fact, Martin Luther himself thought that music was as important as theology in the life of the local church. So I wanted to start this morning with a quote from Martin Luther. Here it is. "A person who does not regard music as a marvelous creation of God must be a clodhopper indeed and does not deserve to be called a human being. He should be permitted to hear nothing but the braying of donkeys and the grunting of hogs." That actually has nothing to do with my sermon. I just wanted to say it out loud because it was so great. Martin Luther, everybody. So why do we sing? That's what I want to talk about this morning. Why do we sing? We sing because God tells us to sing. God tells us to sing. We find in the Old Testament that God instructs his people to sing as part of temple worship. God instructs people to join choirs and to sing along in the song. In the Bible, there are over 400 references to singing. There are 50 direct commands to sing. In the Old Testament, there are 185 songs written out line by line in the Bible. In fact, over the course of Old Testament history, singing can be used as a gauge of Israel's relationship with God. God parts the Red Sea and people sing. People cross the Jordan and Moses teaches them a song. God shows up in the form of a cloud and Israel sings. Over and over again, we can see God's people responding to God in song. Jesus himself sang songs with his disciples. In fact, it is one of the last things he did before he was arrested on earth. He sang songs with his disciples. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul tells us to sing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs whenever we meet together. Ephesians 5 tells us that one of the fruits of being of the Spirit is singing songs to one another. John tells the persecuted church in the book of Revelation to sing a triumphal song to the Lamb. All this to say is that from the very beginning of the Bible to the very end of the Bible, God tells us to sing. Why do we sing? I think we sing because it helps us to remember. It helps us remember a couple things, but first it helps us to remember words. In Deuteronomy 31, God himself used music to help his people sing and to remember words. As Israel was about to enter into the promised land, God instructs Moses to teach them a song. In fact, here's the text. "Now write down the song and teach it to the Israelites and have them sing it so that it may be a witness for me against them. And when many disasters and calamities come on them, this song will testify against them because it will not be forgotten by their descendants. I know what they are disposed to do, even before I bring them into the land I promised them on oath." So Moses wrote down this song that day and taught it to the Israelites. Singing can help us remember words. The most powerful way to memorize something is with a song. Every culture on earth has songs to help them memorize lyrics or numbers or lists. In fact, my youngest daughter actually memorized the entire periodic table with a catchy tune. It is almost like God programmed us to sing so that we wouldn't forget. God wired our brains so that we wouldn't forget when we sing, for we are forgetful people. We forget all of the time. The people of God throughout history have forgotten time and time again the promises and the truth of God. And when we remember words, it can actually transform us. It can actually transform us. Experiencing God in this place, in the gathered community of his people, should actually change us. It can actually reach beyond the walls of this church and out into our day-to-day lives. Now, this sounds simple, but singing and worship in church can be completely isolated and detached from our everyday lives. It can easily become that way, but when we sing, we can continue to worship as we leave this place. We can continue to worship as we drive in the cars on the way home. We can let the truths and the lyrics that we sing ruminate and repeat in our hearts over and over again as we leave this place. The music, the words, the actions, the prayers, everything that we do here on a Sunday morning can play as a soundtrack to the rest of our lives. Singing helps us remember words. Singing also helps us remember who we are. Who we are. I'm not sure if you've noticed this, but when we gather together on a Sunday morning, we always start things out with a song. We don't do this out of haphazard planning. We don't do this because it's easy. We don't do this because it's easier for the latecomers to find seats when everybody's standing. We don't do that because of haphazard planning. We don't sing at the beginning of the service out of habit. We do it because we need to be reminded, first and foremost, that we are children of God. See, when we show up on a Sunday morning, we are broken and we are messy. We know that you are bringing with you all of your pain. We know that you're bringing with you all of your sorrow. We know that you bring all your baggage in here with you every Sunday morning. You don't leave it at the door. We come in here just having spent a week out in the world, and we recognize that it is hard. It is hard. Maybe I'm alone in this, but most Sundays I show up and I sort of feel like a failure. I feel like I've forgotten again who I am. I bring my mess ups, my failings, my trials, my idleness. And by the time I show up on a Sunday morning, spending a week out in the world, I forget who I am. Our failures do not determine who we are. Our failures do not determine who we are. In fact, when we leave this place, sometimes it's like we get spiritual dementia as soon as we leave this place. So when we return, we start with singing. It's the very first thing that we do. Because we are forgetful people, and before we do anything else, we must be reminded that we are not God. We must be reminded that we belong to God. And no matter how hard we try to prove ourselves, no matter how hard we try to manage our self-images, we are fundamentally loved by God. And when we sing, we reorient the distorted view of ourselves. I'm going to say that again. When we sing, we reorient the distorted view of ourselves. Because singing helps us remember who we are. We also sing because it brings us together. It brings us together. When we sing, it breaks down the walls of individualism. When I look at my Facebook feed, yes, even among Christians, I see a divided world. I see that, yes, Christians, even people within the church, have split themselves up into subgroups where they are happily insulated from those that disagree with them. Singing brings all of us together. There's something incredibly unifying when we all proclaim the same truth, proclaim the same prayers and the same praise at the same time. This is especially true in our hyper-individualized culture. We learn to trust each other when we sing. In fact, when we sing together, our brains release a hormone. This is science. Our brains release a hormone called oxytocin. And this hormone is responsible for feelings of trust and solidarity between those who we sing with. The National Center for Biotechnology Information released this study, and it says this: when people sing together, their brains make oxytocin, and that makes them feel trust, solidarity, and connectedness with the people around them. God designed us. He wired our brains so that when we sing together, we feel one with those that we are singing with. Not because we like the same music, not because we like the same Spotify stations. We are one people with very different political affiliations. Did you know this? Did you know that we have different theologies? Did you know that we have different backgrounds in the way that we think the world should operate? These are all differences, but when we sing, we are fundamentally unified together. We can be dear friends with people who are not like us when we sing together. Now that I've talked about why we sing, I want to talk about how we sing. How we sing. With all of this talk about singing, I want to let you in on a little secret. It is not about singing. It is about engaging with God. If you do a word study in worship in the Bible, you will never see a reference in the Bible that is passive. Worship is always active. It is always something that we do. It is not something done to us. It is something we do. Singing just happens to be a communal way that we respond to God. Now, I realize there are many of us here that do not like to sing. Yes, even in church, there are people that do not like to sing. And I want to talk to you if you don't like to sing. I'm not going to make you raise your hands or anything. Because singing is fundamentally a weird thing to do. If you think about it, where else do people sing together in groups? It's odd. It's a really strange thing. I mean, maybe at a baseball game, if you've had a couple. Maybe at a birthday party, or maybe you'll stumble through Auld Lang Syne at New Year's. Where do we do this? It is a strange deal. Imagine going to your favorite coffee shop or restaurant and inviting people to stand up and sing a tune together. It just doesn't happen. These things, this thing that we do on Sunday morning, especially to outsiders, can be a weird thing that we do. And just to illustrate this, and just to show how awkward it can be, I wanted to get help from Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean. Thank you, Mr. Bean. If we were really honest with each other, there are a lot of times that many of us just don't feel like singing. In fact, in a group this size, I bet there are many of you that patiently endure the singing part of the service just to get to the meat, the sermon. If this is you, I want you to hear something. We understand. You are welcome here. You can call this place your home, because I've been there. If you don't like to sing, I want to offer you an apology. I am sorry if you have felt like your only two options in worship were to sing and really get into it, Or two, cross your arms and completely disengage. If those are our only two options, we are in a sad place as a church. I am sorry if you don't like to sing, if you have ever felt like you were less of a Christian for not wanting to sing. Now remember, singing is not the point. Engaging with God in the corporate worship of his people is the point. And we can respond to God many different ways without singing a word. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on. Now I want to talk to you that like to sing, those of you that like to sing. If you like to sing, you need to sing for those that cannot sing. Don't be ashamed. Sing at the top of your lungs. We need your passion. We need your desire. We need you to sing. For many people, it took them everything to get here, dragging along preschoolers and maybe angry teenagers. It took everything within them to get here, and they may not have it within them to sing to God. For those people, asking them to sing may be just too much. So for those of you that don't, that you like to sing, you are not singing on your behalf. You are singing on the behalf of others. You are giving voice for those who are unable to sing. Remember, singing reminds us that we are not alone, that we are unified. There are times in worship that I think to myself, if this group of people can sing these words and actually mean it, then maybe I can too. Ephesians 5 says this, "Be filled with the Spirit, speaking to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs from the Spirit. Sing and make music from your heart to the Lord." The Apostle Paul tells us to speak to one another as we sing. For singing, it's not just about us and our connection with God. It's about singing over the people that are with us. For those of you that like to sing, I want to offer you an apology. If you really like to sing, I am sorry if you have ever felt hindered in worship. If you have ever really wanted to get into it and you felt you wanted to be more expressive and sing even louder, I am sorry if you've ever felt judged in this place. Maybe you've looked around and you felt that people would look at you with suspicion or roll their eyes if you really went for it. For those of you that have wanted to kneel or weep or yes, even clap, for those of you that may want to move your feet a little bit, but you are afraid of being judged or that people would whisper about you after the service, I hope that you can know that this is a safe place. This is a safe place for you where you can express your joy and your sorrow before God and his people. I wanted to give you some advice on worship and singing particularly. One way that we can move forward is next steps. Next steps. And one way that we can move forward is to prepare for worship. To prepare for worship. I don't know if you know this, but I actually post all of the songs that we sing online. You can actually find it. If you go to our website and you go to the next slide, it shows up at the resources tab. You click on that and there's a tab called The Songs We Sing. The Songs We Sing. You click on it and there is a list of every song that we sing at Council Tree. In fact, you can click on the YouTube link and it shows this. There's a video playlist in YouTube where you can actually watch videos of all of the material that we use every Sunday morning. If you click on the Spotify link, it links you to a Spotify playlist of every song that we sing. This is especially helpful if you really connected with a song and you want to know where to find it. If you like it, you can find it there, and then you can actually buy it and promote the artist that wrote the song. This is a way that we can prepare to worship because I actually put these songs up the Wednesday before we're going to sing them. So you have multiple days that you can go online and prepare for worship by listening to the songs and even learning them before you show up here on a Sunday morning. Another way that we can prepare is by praying. There's a group that meets right here in a circle every Sunday morning at 9:30. At 9:30, there's a group of people here that meet to pray for the service. And it is a great way. If you want to prepare for worship, you're invited. You can come pray with us. Because we actually do this because we believe that God wants to do something in this place. That God wants to do something among us. We don't do this like a country club where we can get together with our friends. We do this because we want to be changed, because we want God to do something in our midst. And we pray about it here at 9:30 every Sunday morning. Another way that we can move forward in worship is by experimenting in worship. We can experiment in worship. Sometimes the first thing we need to do is to lighten up when we sing. Sometimes we don't need to take ourselves so seriously. And this is coming from me. I found out recently I'm a 5 on the Enneagram, which I take myself way too seriously all of the time. But I have to tell myself, I need to lighten up. I need to lighten up. One way that you can experiment with worship is with your posture. With your posture. Just as a little joke, I provided a hand signals chart for you. Starting at the rookie level at the top, my favorite in the rookie level is the carry the TV. Carry the TV. And you can move on to the intermediate. My favorite there is the Mufasa. The Mufasa. And eventually, if you really work at it, you can work your way to the Village People, Rocky, and Touchdown. Touchdown, I win. I don't know if you can read it, but at the bottom it says, violent horizontal movement and the waving of oversized flags are strictly prohibited and will result in immediate ejection. All joking aside, our posture can actually affect how we worship. Actually, I find the exact opposite. I find the exact opposite. So sometimes our posture is a reflection of what happens within us. But I find the opposite, that when I change my posture, it can actually affect what is happening with me, within me eternally. Internally, I can be changed, and I can actually, my mind can perk up when I change my posture. Sometimes the simple act of facing my palms up will help me to receive what God has for me. Sometimes placing my palms down will help me to let go of what I need to let go of. I give you permission to experiment with your posture. Another way to experiment is by singing, because some of you don't sing. I know it. I see you every Sunday morning. And I invite you to try singing, because here's the thing. Singing can actually make you feel better. Did you know this? It's science again, people. Singing can actually make you feel better. There's a 2005 study that says this. Group singing can produce satisfying and therapeutic sensations even when the sound produced by the vocal instrument is of mediocre quality. God has actually wired our brains to feel good when we sing, even if we sound terrible when we do it. At Council Tree, you are free to experiment in the way that you worship, just to break it up enough to help you engage. Another way we can move forward is to next find a way to engage, even when you don't want to. So we have 15 to 20 minutes a week to respond to God together and love Him through the act of community worship. Can we worship together and set aside our preferences for 15, 20 minutes a week? Can we look to Christ as we worship, no matter what form it may take? If you have trouble singing out to God and you feel your mind drifting to another place, stop singing. It's okay. I give you permission to stop singing and pray. You can stop singing and just ask God, why is my heart divided right now? Why am I having trouble singing? And just pray out to God. Sometimes the best thing I can do is to just not sing and pray the lyrics to God. Sometimes the best thing for me, like when I'm not leading worship, which isn't very often, but when I'm not leading worship, sometimes I'll just stand with my palms face up and I won't sing. And I'll just let God's people sing over me and wash over me. Sometimes that's the best thing for me to do. In fact, sometimes the best thing for me to do in worship is to sit down while everybody else is standing. I give you permission to do this. Sometimes that posture of simply sitting down to pray will help you engage with God. And I'm giving you permission. You can engage with God in any way that you can, but do it. Engage with God even if you don't want to. As I wrap up this morning, I wanted to bring our attention to the table. For we are going to take communion this morning, the Lord's Supper or the Eucharist. The actual act of taking this bread and of actually taking this cup can actually help us experience the grace of Jesus in this place. This is not just a remembrance service. This is not just an act that we do to remember what Christ has done. We actually can experience the grace of Jesus through these common elements of the bread and the cup. The text that we most commonly use whenever we come to the table is Matthew 26. And I'm going to read it for you again today. While they were eating, Jesus took this bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and he gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat. This is my body." Then he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, singing, "Drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink from the fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." For when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. It's interesting that we always leave that last sentence out. In fact, it was a surprise to me again as I prepared for this worship, for this service and this sermon, that the disciples sang after they took communion. And it says this, "I tell you, I will not drink from the fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." So when we take the Lord's Supper today, when we come to this holy table, we are not only remembering what Christ has done, we are rehearsing. We are rehearsing for the day when we will eat and we will drink and when we will sing with Jesus face to face. Amen.